At a time like this, it's easy to see why local news is so important and why that news should be free for everyone who needs it to be. Your support of KCUR makes this essential reporting possible. If you can, please donate. KCUR.org/give. And thanks.
Good morning and welcome to up-to-date special coverage coronavirus in Kansas City. I'm Steve Kraske. We'll begin today with a telephone conversation with Kansas Congresswoman Charisse Davids, who is self-quarantining. Later, we'll talk with about how Kansas Cityans are getting creative to stay in touch with neighbors while maintaining safe distancing, and also how COVID-19 is impacting artists. First, though, last night, Kansas lawmakers passed a budget and adjourned until next month. Covering that for KCUR is Stephen Caranda, who joins me now. Stephen, good morning.
Good morning.
Was this the rush version of budget passing because of the pandemic here, Stephen? Is that what's going on here?
That's right. Left early for spring break. This is not a complete budget, but it's enough of a budget that if they can't come back when they're planning to next month because of the virus, then at least state agencies and education will have a basic level of spending they can count on.
Lawmakers put some $65 million in the budget for the coronavirus. Some of that will be available pretty quickly here. What's the money for, and why is it in this current budget?
Well, it's in the current year's budget because we can use it then as quickly as possible. The goal here is to have $50 million available that a panel of lawmakers can dole out as we figure out how we need to respond. And then $15 million would go to the Division of Emergency Management.
When the legislature returns next month, they'll still have plenty of work. I mean, what's still left on the agenda, Stephen?
Well, a lot of the big issues that people have been thinking about before coronavirus are still up in the air. A Medicaid expansion, this constitutional amendment over abortion, those are all things that they just kind of pushed aside because they had to get a basic budget and get out of town, hoping to keep coronavirus from affecting the session more.
It's interesting to me that those very contentious issues appear to have been shelved, at least for the time being, as lawmakers work through this budget.
Yep, on big issues like that, they just said, okay, we're not focusing on that. They stopped work on pretty much everything except a handful of items that were directly related to the state's coronavirus response. For example, they also extended unemployment benefits and made it easier to get unemployment because a lot of people right now, as you know, are going out of work.
You know, given the nature of this pandemic, how confident are lawmakers, Stephen, that they'll actually wind up returning next month?
Well, they have every intention of doing that, but they gave themselves some flexibility to come back earlier if they need to, or delay if things are not that great when they're planning to come back in late April. So they want to come back. There are a lot of things they want to do, but they've got this budget in place, so they're good at least for now.
Okay, that's Stephen Caranda, who covers the State House for KCUR. Stephen, always appreciate it. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Congresswoman Charisse Davids has been casting consequential votes in the House as Congress works to come to grips with the coronavirus now sweeping the nation. Congresswoman Davids joins me now, and nice to have you, Congresswoman. Welcome.
Good morning.
You are self-quarantining now. Tell us why, and when did this begin?
Well, first, I appreciate the coverage. I just want to say that I appreciate the coverage that you all have been doing over there. I get your newsletter every morning too.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
So I am self-quarantining because last week I had contact with a fellow member of Congress who recently tested positive for the COVID-19. And after I saw his announcement, I called the attending physician of Congress, and the attending physician advised that I stay home and self-quarantine until March 26th. So far, I haven't experienced any symptoms. I'm feeling well. The attending physician actually told me that, you know, with the dates and that sort of thing, this is really out of an abundance of caution.
Sure.
I'm low risk at this point, and so are the people who I've interacted with recently. But I really am trying to emphasize that we all have a role to play in reducing the spread of the virus. And so I'm doing my part by taking the advice of a medical professional and public health officials. And so I'm going to continue to work really hard. I'm just going to do it from home. And, you know, we obviously have this public health crisis to deal with. Mm-hmm. So I'm spending a lot of time talking to our public health officials and folks at various levels of government to work on keeping our community as safe as possible.
How difficult is it to be a member of Congress while self-quarantining?
Well, it's definitely still busy. I would say the technical getting ramped up on the teleconferencing, and you know, we obviously had to change all of our meetings, which we started doing actually last week, was started shifting to telephone calls and video conferencing for all of our face-to-face meetings. So even before I went into self-quarantine, we were already doing all the measures about working virtually where possible and that sort of thing. So at least the shift has not been super dramatic because it's been happening over the course of the last week. Mm-hmm. And the only thing I would say is that because we're all over the country, we're having to do lots of conference calls. There's a lot of communication happening around the next bill that we're looking at in terms of economic stimulus.
Right.
And then, of course, we're doing tons of outreach. I've been talking to a lot of folks about the impacts on small business, the impacts on folks who don't have necessarily the resources to weather something like this. And so I think it looks like the virtual version of what I do most days, which is I focus so much on this on the coronavirus.
I'm visiting with Kansas Congresswoman Charisse Davids. Congresswoman, what do you make of the way the nation has responded to the coronavirus? What's gone right? Where have we fallen short?
Well, I think that there are a good number of things that are going right, and I'll talk about that. I do want to, you know, I think a lot of folks feel a sense of frustration, and I've shared that frustration around the lack of how long it took us to start to ramp up the testing, mm-hmm. And not just the actual testing of people, but getting ramped up to get tests into production. And so that's something that I think that, of course, we're going to do a lot of after action around this when we're on the other side of this thing. And we will get on the other side of this thing. There are a lot of people coming together and working on this. And so I think that that's probably a source of frustration, not just for me, but for a lot of people. And I think what we're doing, what we're seeing folks do right, and the trend that I'm seeing and that I hope we see more of is really people taking seriously. I mean, we don't need to panic. Nobody needs to buy a year's worth of toilet paper, but we do need to take it seriously. And if folks can, you know, really, really get into the mindset of practicing the social distancing, making sure that you're doing the, you know, washing hands for at least 20 seconds. If you don't feel well, don't leave the house. You know, making sure that we're thinking about our loved ones and our community and our colleagues. That's something that I'm starting to see more and more of, and I'm really I think that's something we really need to focus on.
I was going to say, Congress is now focusing on the Phase 3 bill that includes direct payments to Americans that you alluded to just a couple minutes ago. There's relief for the airline industry to the tune of like $50 billion and for other distressed sectors of the economy. The direct payments to Americans would total $250 billion each on April 6th and May 18th. And we're talking checks of $1,200 a person for those making up to $75,000 annually, at least under the Senate Republican version of this bill. What do you make of it? Is it enough? Is it too short? Where are we here?
Well, one of the things I'll say is that I'm really glad to see that both of the bills that we passed in response to the coronavirus emergency were bipartisan. The president the president signed both of them as soon as it hit his desk. I think that's a really good thing to see. Mm-hmm. I do think we're going to have to hammer out some of the details of the next economic or the next bill in response to the coronavirus. Any economic proposal that Congress has needs to first and foremost be focused on helping the people, because there are workers being laid off right now, parents who don't have child care, families are struggling to figure out where their next meal is going to come from, small business owners, like I said earlier, who might not be able to reopen their doors after all of this is said and done. So, you know, my office and the folks on my team we're really prioritizing the needs of those folks. We're looking at lots of colleagues about how we make sure that of people and our businesses, both big and small, are taken care of. But I am very focused also on making sure that there's oversight and guardrails around any economic stimulus package right. That we have.
I should clarify, Congresswoman, the proposal that Senate Republicans are talking about would be a one-time payment now that has shifted in the last couple of days, folks eligible for up to $1,200. Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer has said that that's not enough money. Is your first inclination, do you agree with Schumer or not, or what do you think?
Well, I do think that there's going to have to be, so I think that this, we don't know yet what the economic fallout is going to look like. And I think we all need to be prepared to not just be thinking about what is a one-time package that we put together. And from the conversations I've been having with my colleagues, that has been the way that we've been looking at this. We have to think about the impacts that this is having on our public health and safety and that system. We have to think about the impacts on the financial security of our families and workers and businesses across the country. And I actually don't think I don't think we're coming at it from the right perspective if we think that, one more bill is going to be the be-all, end-all answer to this, which is why I think that it's good for us to have these conversations about which provisions are we going to see in this next package. Also recognizing that any package we put together has to prioritize the people and have, oversight and guardrails around how we, how we help make sure that our economy gets back up and thriving.
Congresswoman, there's also a lot of concern, as you know, about the availability of testing in the Johnson County area. What are you hearing about that? Do you see any likelihood of more tests being made available anytime soon?
Yeah, there is. I mean, first of all, there's a lot of frustration. And I mentioned this earlier. I share that frustration about the lack of tests that we have. And in talking to our public health officials and, the various hospitals and providers, there's a real concern about the supplies being available. And, I've called on the president to invoke the Defense Production Act. He's mentioned doing it, but hasn't taken action yet. We really need him to invoke that act right now so we can start getting those supplies on the front line. Our healthcare professionals need those supplies for the patients and and we need our healthcare providers to be protected as well. The governor has done done a lot to try to get more supplies to the area. There's a national stockpile. Kansas is working with the national stockpile to get more supplies, and we're being as helpful as we can in that process. I'm going to keep pushing for the president to enact, and also we have companies.
I think Congresswoman Davids, you're breaking up just a little bit here. I want to thank Congresswoman Charisse Davids for taking some time with us today. She was joining us via cell phone. She's self-quarantining back here in the district. Congresswoman, we sure appreciate your time. Well, the other day, one of my neighbors marked off a series of X's in the street, 6 feet apart. Then other neighbors were invited out for a visit just to get a little socialization in. I thought it was a great idea. People came out of their homes, stood on their marks, and caught up with one another. So we got to wondering here at Up to Date about ways that Kansas City area residents are finding to keep up with friends and neighbors during this obviously very difficult time. Yes, it means staying 6 feet apart, but is it still possible to be social? We think so. We're wondering what your experience has been. What great ideas do you have? You can call us at 816-235-2888 or tweet us at KCUR Up to Date. Again, 816-235-2888. Back with us again is Katie Kriegshauser. She's director of the Kansas City Center for Anxiety Treatment, and she was on the show earlier this week talking about how people can cope with the coronavirus. Katie, welcome back. Good to have you.
Thank you for having me, Steve.
Well, what do you think of my neighborhood getting together 6 feet apart out on the street like that?
I think it's wonderfully creative. I think this is a time where I'm actually seeing more people out in my neighborhood than ever before.
Really? Yeah.
I am. I went to Luce Park the other day, lots of space to spread out, take my dog for a walk. And it was like a Saturday afternoon. It was really nice to see everyone out and about. And I think now we're all working from home and we're all getting a little bit of cabin fever. And I think we need to get out and about, and we're finding creative ways to do that right now.
I should give credit to Julie Peterson and Courtney Falk, two of my neighbors who put that whole thing together. But you were saying the other day that this kind of socialization at a time like this of people staying in their homes is really important.
Absolutely. We know that social interaction is really crucial for staving off depression and anxiety. And right now, we're all at really heightened levels of anxiety. So it's important that we stay connected to one another.
And getting creative at a time like this might be part of the equation here. We've seen the balcony singers in Italy. Anything else that's come across your plate that people are doing that sort of makes sense?
I'm seeing lots of friends posting screenshots of them having virtual hangouts, having virtual movie nights all across the country.
Is that right?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Virtual movie nights, meaning they're all watching the same movie at roughly the same time?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, that's a really good idea.
Yeah, I encourage the popcorn as well. Really get into the spirit of it. And I think it's really bringing people together who haven't talked to each other in a long time.
So tell us again, maybe in a little more depth, why is this so important?
We are social creatures. We thrive on social interaction. It helps us to feel connected to one another. And there's plenty of research in the field of depression on what helps us stay well. And one of those factors is connecting with others. When we use a treatment for depression called behavioral activation, which has been shown to be the most effective treatment for treating individuals with major depressive disorder, one of the four activities we prescribe, so to say, is social interaction.
Mm. Well, if our listeners have some good ideas that maybe others might want to copy for how to get that social interaction, I'm all ears. 816-235-2888 is our phone number here, or tweet us at KCUR Up to Date. What's the value of remembering that staying at home doesn't necessarily mean that you have to stay in your home?
I think that's really crucial right now. We definitely don't want to be taking that term social distancing too literally, in that we're socially isolating. Mm-hmm. So we want to draw that clear line between social distancing and social isolation. Social isolation can have negative impacts on mental health, especially for elderly or people who are at risk. So we need to be socially distancing and taking that recommendation very seriously, but finding ways to connect with each other.
We had one tweet that illustrates how not to communicate with your neighbors these days. This tweet said, my neighbors across the street are hosting a dinner party on their porch, and not the funny, ha-ha, we're sitting 6 feet away from each other kind, but the sit together and share a few bottles of wine together kind. Obviously, that might be a little problematic.
Yes, I think so. I think maybe enjoying those bottles of wine on your respective porches would be a great idea right now. I think I mentioned the other day that some anxiety is warranted right now. We do need to listen to that signal. And I echo Congresswoman David's comments earlier. We do need to take this seriously. We do not need to panic, but we do need to take precautions. So listen to that voice in your head that says something isn't quite right. Listen to those recommendations, but we don't need to go into panic mode.
Again, we're looking for good ideas for how to connect with people during this time of the pandemic and coronavirus. 816-235-2888. I'm wondering, when you're in groups like this and people expressing grave anxiety, people are expressing grave anxiety or panic, can that kind of anxiety and panic be contagious?
Yes. So when we're spending this social time together, we don't want to be using that time to do what we call co-rumination. Rumination is unproductive worry, and we don't want to just be bouncing that worry off each other.
Because you can really crush the vibe pretty quickly when you do that, right?
Oh, absolutely. And it's been shown to be contagious. We know that when there's a lot of research on this, especially in teenagers, that when teenagers get together and co-ruminate instead of problem solving, that it can increase depression and anxiety. So if you're engaging with someone and they start to go down that worry path, we want to redirect to we can validate those fears and emotions, but then direct to active coping.
Okay, so being smart about what you're talking about is something we're thinking about here, it sounds like.
Mm-hmm.
As a friend and neighbor, what are some things that we can say to those who are, you know, particularly nervous about the coronavirus, Katie?
I think, once again, validating, yeah, this is a scary time. We're all feeling on edge, so we want to validate what's valid here, right?
Mm-hmm.
Validate this is scary and anxiety-provoking, but then shift to support. Shift to, I'm here for you, let me know what you need, building that community back up.
I'm wondering what you've picked up from your clients this week in terms of how the level of anxiety in our community is changing as this crisis lingers.
Well, I would say, actually, most of my clients are staying fairly calm throughout this. I am seeing more people reaching out who are not established with us already, who are now seeking services because they're finding either they were dealing with anxiety previously and now it's really gone over the top,
mm-hmm.
Or people just looking for resources. So we're going to be sharing resources as often as we can on our website, on our Facebook, on our social media, sharing free tips on how to manage your anxiety during this time.
Okay, we're talking about good ideas for how to connect with neighbors and friends during this difficult time. 816-235-2888. Mike from South Kansas City. Mike, you're on the air.
Yes, now I'm retired and all that. When I was at work, I used to have access to it. But anyways, to the equipment to do it. Anyways, I was going to suggest conference calls. Where you people call into, I mean, a conference call with your friends, you know, you set them up. And I think it's a lot more, I haven't tried this, but it seems like it would be, it's just a get together and gab fest. And anybody can join in and leave and whenever they want and all that. But I think it's a lot more, I'm guessing that it would be a lot more personal than using the networks, the social networks, as they call them. So,
yeah, good suggestion, Mike. I appreciate that. Not a bad idea.
Oh, it's a great idea. And I think he's right that it may feel somewhat impersonal, to connect over Twitter, Facebook. That's kind of one step, but actually connecting to someone maybe not face-to-face, but hearing their voice can really increase our sense of well-being and connectedness.
It's interesting. The Washington Post had a story about this yesterday, this idea of how people can connect and be helpful at a time like this. And again, the trick is to manage this while maintaining that social distancing. And that's the crucial nut of this issue. But one idea, a multilingual nurse offering to help with language barriers for folks. One person volunteering to spend time chatting via Skype with lonely older folks. I thought, great idea. Mm-hmm. Some restaurants are letting kids and seniors eat free through carryout, you know. There's pet sitting, dog walking, all those kinds of ideas, too. Lots of good ideas out there. Let's go to Beth from Leawood. Beth, you're on Up to Date special coverage, coronavirus in Kansas City. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. Hope everyone's staying safe out there. So we did this past week because our house had to be quarantined because we had a college-age student come back from California, as well as myself get a respiratory infection, and so I didn't want to put anyone at risk. So we are officially quarantined, which means, you know, you really can't go out at all, so that the 6 feet is really even beyond what we can do. So having said that, my girlfriends and I arranged a Zoom call. And Zoom has been used in the past more for, you know, business applications or academic applications. But we decided to do a Zoom call, which is very much like FaceTime. And you can have, though, up to, I think, 50 people.
Yes.
And so it kind of looks like the Brady Bunch on your screen. So you have everybody's face.
Yeah.
And so even though they were drinking wine and I was drinking hot tea, it was really social. We had, you know, five of us on the call. We were on it for more than an hour. And then we decided, you know, this is something that we could do weekly. And not only weekly, what we could do is to support the local restaurants. Everyone's going to order from the same restaurant or caterer. So I think next week we're trying to arrange with Lon Lane to everybody order on the same night so that everyone can have dinner and eat together and also support our local restaurants and caterers. And so we're hoping maybe even expand it to maybe, you know, even everybody invite five friends and then, you know, we can have maybe, you know, 100 people on this party.
I can relate to so much of what you're saying. I'm doing Zoom with my students right now, and it is like the Brady Bunch as their pictures pop up across the top of the screen. And I think I just read in the New York Times that the value of Zoom now exceeds the value of American Airlines. So clearly a lot of people are checking out Zoom these days.
Yes, yes. Well, I think from, you know, a mental health standpoint, it made us all feel so much better and connected. And I think at the end of the day, you know, as well as keeping everybody safe, that was what the goal was.
Thanks for the call, Beth. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
Let's go to David from Mission. David, you're on Up to Date. Good morning.
Yes. What we've done is we're in our 70s, and we've found that with the inexpensive gas, we can drive over to where kids, grandkids are. They come out of their house. We stay in the car, and we can have real long conversations. We've been over there visiting even for an hour in the driveway, and yet everybody's kept their distance, and it really gives us a chance to, in person, deal with grandkids and kids and catch up on everything.
And that's working out for you pretty well, it sounds like.
It is. It is. We have a great driveway communication.
That's great. David, thanks for the call. I appreciate it.
You bet.
Let's go to Martha from Overland Park. Martha, you're on the show.
Hi, Steve. Thanks for doing this show.
You bet.
I'm calling because I'm so thankful that we have all of the electronic things we have. A friend called me yesterday on FaceTime. I've never used that, but it was wonderful. And I think we just, you know, we're so fortunate to have all those opportunities. So thanks a lot.
No, I couldn't agree with you more. I just was telling my students yesterday, this Zoom technology is just absolutely remarkable. You can connect, I think, even with more than 50 people these days. Mm-hmm. They're all there. They can all chat, and you can actually have what's a reasonable facsimile of an actual college class. It's absolutely remarkable. Robbie from Baldwin, Kansas. Robbie, you're on Up to Date.
Good morning. I just wanted to mention the value of meditation in decreasing stress. I belong to a meditation group in Lawrence, and we did a conference call for our meditation class this week, which seemed to really be helpful to everybody in the class.
Yeah.
Those of us especially who are self-quarantining, we're in our 60s. I also wanted to ask about the stress, or mention the stress in children. I have grandchildren who are really social kids in sports and friends, And they're not able to do that right now. And it's very difficult for parents, especially when there are other parents coordinating playgroups mm-hmm. and playdates. And my grandkids aren't allowed to do that right now.
Hey, what about the stress in parents, Katie?
I think parents are definitely stressed right now. A lot of them are kind of looking at each other going...
The stress in kids, too, is what I meant. Yeah.
Yes, yes. Yeah. A lot of parents are saying, okay, well, apparently now we're homeschool teachers. And kids are, especially if you have a kid who's saying, well, hey, so-and-so is able to get together with their friends. What about me?
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is a time where it's important to share age-appropriate information with kids, not overload them with information, but to say, hey, you know, people are getting sick. We have to do our part to make sure people stay safe, stay healthy, like grandma and grandpa, they need to stay healthy. So we need to do our part right now. And I know this isn't the most fun, but let's come up with some ideas together of things we can do as a family.
And it strikes me, Robbie, that's one of the core issues of parenting, right? What do you do when other kids can do one thing but your kids can't? And that issue is going to be around for a long time.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Good luck, Robbie. Appreciate the call. Let's go to Carol from Lawrence. Carol, nice to have you. Good morning.
Hi. I wanted to say that or appreciate my daughter-in-law, Hannah, because knowing that sharing food is part of our cultural heritage and sharing meals. And so Hannah invited me to a FaceTime dinner. So we all were together over FaceTime, sitting at the table and having our usual conversations. I live separately.
Neat idea.
So
yeah.
Oh, that's a wonderful way to connect, is make sure that you're still able to do those things that you value, that you find joy in, but maybe we're just doing them a little bit differently right now.
You know, one thing I thought it would be worth mentioning as we begin to wrap this up here, this notion that it's hard sometimes for people to ask for help from others. I mentioned that, you know, one idea of pet sitting for others, dog walking as a way to connect, but sometimes people have a hard time reaching out.
Absolutely, people do, of saying, hey, I'm really struggling right now, and I'm also thinking of all of our friends who are healthcare professionals right now who are also struggling with that. And so I'm seeing some people just put on social media just the open question, hey, how's everyone doing? And giving people a chance to actually say, I need some support right now.
Jean from Mission. Jean, you're on the show.
My daughter, their neighborhood has lots of kids. She has a 4-year-old, and they're all elementary. And they are making mailboxes for the kids today, and then they're all writing letters. And for the older neighbors, they're writing special letters to leave in their mailboxes. And then they're going to go out and walk and deliver them individually. So,
now, that strikes me as a great idea, Katie.
Jean,
I'm glad
great.
You called that in. Yeah.
Yeah. I thought it was, too, and so I thought I'd better call you and spread the word.
Kids love getting letters.
Right. I think everyone loves getting letters.
Yeah.
We don't get enough letters these days.
Not personal letters anymore, just the bills. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Well, that's Katie Kriegshauser. She's director of the Kansas City Center for Anxiety Treatment. Katie, thanks for coming in again. We sure appreciate it.
Thank you.
After a short break, we'll come back. We'll talk about the arts community and how it's faring and some creative ideas that artists are employing to stay in touch with their audiences. I'm Steve Kraske, and you're listening to up-to-date special coverage, Coronavirus in Kansas City, on KCUR 89.3. And we are back. I'm Steve Kraske. The steps being taken to minimize social contact and the spread of the novel coronavirus have caused a lot of chaos for our local art scene. Most of the arts organizations in town have canceled performances, and some have completely shut down. That's definitely a hit in the revenue stream for them. Plus, what are other independent artists like actors, musicians, and writers who often rely on crowds, promotional events, or close personal contact? How are they going to make money? Since we don't know how long we'll be social distancing for, local organizations and artists have had to get creative with how they, one, continue to support themselves, and two, continue their mission of bringing art to the community. With us today are three people who have been thinking about this a whole lot. They are Julian Zugasagoitia, is the CEO and director of the Nelson Atkins Museum of Art. Julian, always good to have you here. Welcome.
Thank you for having me here.
Maite Salazar is a poet and writer who recently started a group to support gig workers in Kansas City. They're also running for Congress in Missouri's 5th District. Maite, nice to have you. Welcome.
Thank you so much.
Danny Kane is the owner of the Raven Bookstore in Lawrence. Danny, welcome back to KCUR.
Thanks, Steve. Glad to be here.
And if you're an artist in the greater Kansas City area, have you found a unique way to bring your work to the community in these troubled times? Or do you have suggestions for artists that can no longer share their work in the ways they usually do? Call us 816-235-2888 or tweet us at KCUR up to date. Well, Maite, how would you say independent artists in the art scene these days are being impacted right now? What are you seeing around town?
Well, right now it's mostly an income impact because, so many performances, so many art shows, so many openings have been canceled. And not only that, but so many restaurants and bars have closed, obviously. So a lot of our artists are not just, you know, paying the rent with their art. Unfortunately, they're having to have 2 and 3 jobs. So when those sources of income are taken away from them, it's particularly scary.
So this is a really tough time.
It's an incredibly tough time. We've been hearing from people that just in one day have lost all of their income. They have no idea how they're going to pay rent. There's some that are sick. There's some that are immunocompromised. Some people are disabled. So it's really kind of a time of scrambling to make sure that we're all taken care of.
You know, this week you started the KC Gig Worker Support page on Facebook. What is that and what are people posting there?
So the KC Gig Worker Support Group is something that I was like, well, I can foresee that we're about to all lose our jobs.
Yeah.
So we are
saw the train coming.
Yeah. So we are going to need something, some sort of support, whether that's jobs that people have that they can offer to other people who have lost their jobs, whether that's people with extra supplies, like if somebody has a dragon sword of toilet paper that they're sitting on, you know, yeah, they can have a place to offer that. Because I did see a lot of people on Facebook starting to ask, like, well, how can we support those people? And I was like, well, we're kind of not really all in one place for people to find. So our group is specifically for gig workers, for artists, for musicians, and it's for people who want to support them, especially. So we have people that are going to like that are posting their art, that are posting their videos, professional pages, etc. So there's a lot of ways that you can find to support those artists.
You know, I was really struck. You started this group on Sunday night and you had 600 people in it within 24 hours. Just
yes.
Curious, where are you at now?
We're a little over 1,500.
Yeah, so this is something that's evolving very quickly here.
Incredibly quickly, yeah.
Julian Zugasa-Goitia, this strikes me as a pivotal moment for the arts in Kansas City right now. How are you seeing it?
So, well, first of all, I congratulate Maite on this effort. And this is the time also to support more locally. And so what
yes.
you're doing is granular. Yeah. It is really supporting the ecosystem in which we live and having Danny and also buying books. This is a time to locally support mm-hmm. what we're doing. But it is as difficult as this time is, and the difficult decision of closing the museum, because the museum also wants to be the place where people come together, people of solace, and sometimes, you know, you reflect. But it is part of being responsible and part of being on the collective. Now,
hard decision for you?
Very hard. I mean,
I was looking forward to coming over, to be honest. Yeah.
It's disheartening. And this right now, spring break is our best season. We had a great show, the Nefertari show. So
right.
all of the moment that we're going to be, so not only we're losing revenue, again, all of our employees are on stand still, although working from home and trying to be very creative. So there's also the resilience, and we were talking earlier, of the resilience of all of this group of people just to come with creativity and solve it. But I have a couple of things to offer is that the Sculpture Park, the Donald J. Ho Sculpture Park is still open. People
right.
can come, bring their kids or you know, and provided we respect some social distancing, but the works of art are there. The beautiful lawn gives you solace. And we're trying things that, and giving people access to, for instance, I recorded, and you being a professional know that when we record, we want to do everything perfect. But
right.
this is also the time to be nimble. With a handheld phone, I gave a quick tour of the Nefertari show. It's going to go online today, just before we had to shut down the building. And I myself, I'm not as indispensable to be in the building. Only security people and very, very few people are allowed in. I was kicked out. But before we did the last rush, we taped it on a phone. It's edited and it's there. And so we're trying to be giving access and content. Our YouTube channel is marvelous, and this is the time to look again to the lectures you might have missed, like Andy Goldsworthy when he was here. We have a lot of things documented. So we're trying to use all of our digital means to continue providing comfort and solace through our means.
You know, Danny Kane, as an independent bookstore owner over in Lawrence, I just can't help but wonder how COVID-19 is impacting you right now.
Well, the main impact, like the Nelson Atkins, we've had to basically shut our doors to the public. So it's required a tremendous adaptation and pivoting in our business model. And very quickly, we've converted to basically a mail order business. And so we are offering free delivery in Lawrence. If it's in stock, we'll deliver it the same day.
You're going to hop in the car and drive it over.
It's every day of the last week. I've been driving around all afternoon delivering books. We've converted all of our shipping on our website to $1 per order anywhere in the country. We have free curbside pickup, and the store is open just for quick order pickup. So we've really implemented those policies to make sure we can get books to as many people as we possibly can. We've also thought about ways we can serve our literary community as well. We've teamed up with the Lawrence Public Library to have a cart of free books outside our store since the libraries are closed. People need access to books at a time like this. So on our sidewalk, every day the weather permits, we've got a cart of free books that the Library Foundation and Friends has provided from their sale. And we've also launched an online initiative called Book Benefactors, where people can nominate people in need to receive surprise shipments of books from us that we curate. And you can also go to bookbenefactors.com to donate to make that happen. And all of this is in hopes of both serving our literary community, getting books to people in a time when books can be really helpful, and keeping our booksellers employed and busy for as long as they can, because they're creative people. They're part-time workers. They are facing a lot of uncertainty too. So I'm doing everything I possibly can to keep them with some measure of stability while serving our literary community.
I think this qualifies you, Danny, as being nimble. I think that's the very definition for a businessman having to be nimble.
I think that's the idea of being nimble has served independent bookstores well.
Right.
Even before this time of crisis, we've had to adapt to many changes in our business model. This one is a bit more dramatic than others, but being nimble and creative has served us very well so far.
How artists can use creative ways to stay in connection with their connected to their audiences. That's our topic here. 816-235-2888 is our number, or tweet us at KCUR up to date. Kelly Hunt joins us from Lawrence, the great singer-songwriter. Kelly, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
You bet, Kelly. Go ahead.
Well, you know, one of the things that we've been doing is about a little over a week ago, I just got the idea to do a Facebook Live solo concert, and we just wanted to reconnect with people. We were all feeling pretty disconnected right now. I know that a lot of artists have shows and tours canceled everywhere, including us. So it was just a way to reach out, and you know, it's one of those things that you really don't know how it's going to turn out. And we were astonished. We had thousands of people watching from all over the country and actually all over the world. And Steve, it was, you know, it was really gratifying. And one of the things that
can people still watch it, Kelly?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. They can go to my, Kelly Hunt Music, Facebook page, K-E-L-L-E-Y.
Right.
Facebook page. It's still posted. And we got such great feedback from folks while in real time, while I was playing and singing. They started saying, talking to each other and connecting with each other, and they asked for more. So I'm doing another one Saturday night.
No kidding.
I'm doing what I can to stay out in the world, stay connected, and help people have some fun. Feel not so isolated, and I'm going to do an all-request show Saturday night.
Oh, that's a good idea.
So far, my fans have requested 47 different songs of mine, so
that could be a long concert, Kelly. Yeah.
I think it may turn into a series.
Are other musicians doing the same thing? Are you seeing this trend around the country?
Absolutely, yeah. Everybody from Yo-Yo Ma, who's done this series called Songs for Comfort, Chris Steele, many of our local and regional artists, and I would just urge people to truly support locally. It's one thing to earn your living from the arts. It's another to have it immediately dropped within one day's time. And, boy, it's part of how we deal with the shock of it is to reach out and realize we have something to give. So a lot of these concerts, including mine, people can watch for free, or mm-hmm. they can decide to use an online source to, quote, buy a ticket, you know, at any price they want.
Right.
And people are being very generous to us right now. It's our lifeline, Steve. It really is.
This is Kelly Hunt Music on Facebook, K-E-L-L-E-Y, Hunt Music on Facebook, right?
That's correct.
All right, Kelly. Thanks for calling in, and good luck with the series, okay?
Thanks so much, Steve.
You
okay,
bet.
Hang in there.
You bet.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Let's go to Kristen from Kansas City, Missouri. Kristen, you're on up-to-date special coverage, coronavirus in Kansas City. Good morning.
Good morning.
Go ahead, Kristen.
I was calling. I had heard, you all might have already heard this since you're NPR folk, but I heard a Washington bookstore owner sharing this idea on Morning Edition of taking reservations from groups of friends. Like he said, 5, but I don't know why you couldn't do groups of 9 or 10, since that's the current recommendation. And so their shop is closed, but you can book an hour where you all can come in and amble around and shop the shelves and, you know, and just kind of get out together in that way. And, you know, I'm thinking like if you think of Wise Blood, or, you know, how they have all the art up on the walls, or Prosperous has the music downstairs. I mean, there might be
right.
a way to kind of involve more than just the booksellers in that opportunity.
Well, so. Danny Kane from the Raven and Lawrence, there's an idea for you.
Yeah, I've seen a couple stores do that. I know Magic City Books in Tulsa has set up Sign Up Genius, where you can book yourself an hour's worth of time to go browse their store. And it's an interesting idea. In our case at the Raven and Lawrence, we've been so busy with online order fulfillment that we've had to convert our entire fiction room into a shipping desk.
Oh, no,
and we
sure.
cleared off all the tables, and it's just fulfilling the amount of orders we've got daily has basically transformed the landscape of the store. So it wouldn't even be fun to browse right now.
Yeah.
If that happens to slow down, it is an interesting idea. And it's of course, another example of being nimble and creative and finding ways to engage your customers and provide them a link to the literary community while maintaining social distancing.
Kristen, thanks for the call. Again, creative ways that artists can stay connected with their audiences. That's our topic here. Richard from Lawrence, you're on the show, Richard.
Hi, Steve.
Hi.
I am a performing artist, and I'm also the producer of the Lawrence Busker Festival. And so, you know, I've got a lot of street performing in my background. It doesn't really come across too well on FaceTime or Zoom. So what we're thinking about doing is starting a thing called Book a Busker, where a street performer will come and perform in your driveway while you watch from a safe distance or even from the inside of your house.
Interesting.
And
yeah.
I know. That's what I thought, too. And we thought maybe this might give, especially all these homebound families, a little break from Netflix and
it's a neat idea.
Screen time.
Yeah, very good idea. Richard, thanks for calling. I appreciate it.
You bet.
Julian, we had someone from, I think, Michelle Tyrene Johnson's Facebook page wanted to know, what are the arts funders in town doing right now to support the arts? What are you seeing happening there?
You know, I think the entire philanthropic community is rallying around, and especially Kansas City has, in particular, great group of philanthropists that are supporting Kansas City. And mm-hmm. I see right now, I think we're all just coming together
right.
and discussing what the outcomes will be. But I'm very hopeful that we'll come together to support the arts in a big way so that overall the ecosystem of the arts is whole as we navigate these very uncertain times.
You're saying it might take a week or two to sort this out, but maybe more support might be coming.
Totally.
Yeah. Again, our number, 816-235-2888, or tweet us at KCUR UpToDate. Maite, can you give us some other examples of how people are being creative right now as they adapt their art for a different form of consumption, like, you know, offering music lessons via video, that kind of thing?
Yeah, absolutely. So people are being really creative right now. They're selling gift cards to their businesses. They are actually, we've started kind of like a homegrown like DoorDash type of deal where people who are still feeling healthy and have cars will go and without the, you know, middleman of DoorDash will actually go and get groceries for you and bring them to your house, et cetera. People are starting to do a lot of live streams. So we've been talking a lot about how to do group live streams, what the best way to do that is. And also, people are just, you know, really starting to reach out right now. And I would really, I know that some other people know a lot more sponsors in the art world, but there are GoFundMes that are already up for people. So if you know anyone, if you know anyone that would like to donate to those, you can find them all on the group, Casey Giggler.
I was going to say, in response to my question to Julian about what the patron community is doing, what would you like to see folks do? What would be useful right now?
Really money, rent money. There are so many people that are just so worried about still having a place to live.
Mm-hmm.
And so there have been quite a few funds that have come up. But what I am seeing on those is that you have to prove that you're a full-time artist or a full-time musician in order to get funds from some of these places. Mm-hmm. And as I mentioned before, a lot of our artists really have to have two or three jobs to support themselves and their art. So
yeah,
for them, those funds aren't going to be available.
Julian?
You know, now changing hats, as I'm part of, I'm the chair right now of the Warhol Foundation. And one of the things that as the Warhol Foundation grappling with this, and it was the most empathetic letter sent out by the people who manage our grants and when we give money. And the letter said, we're going to be as flexible as possible. Mm-hmm. You know, so the important thing is we have given grants to people we trust, people and organizations we trust, and artists in particular. And we say, hey, normally the grant had these requirements. Right now, we know that the world is changing. Take your time. Do whatever you need with the money. Like almost it became general operating support. Mm-hmm. And so I think that is also a very good reaction that I hope that that is shared more and that also our organizations locally think of that. This is the time to give general operating support or the quickest grants to the people that you have already been supported, to mm-hmm. the artists that are in need, because this is the time that we need that kind of support.
Yeah. I also want to point out that the Nelson is pushing out pictures of art on Instagram and Twitter, and folks say it's absolutely lovely, Julian. So great stuff there.
We have a great creative team that also requested people, hey, what is your favorite art? And we'll continue that, and we want to continue the engagement with our public, yes.
Susan from Midtown, Kansas City. Susan, good morning.
Hi, Steve. Thank you for taking my call.
You bet.
I have elderly parents who are in a retirement living facility, and while I'm really happy they're safe, they are going stir crazy.
Mm.
So I just want to put an idea out there to the musicians. A lot of these places have common outside areas, courtyards, and if some of the musicians would contact retirement homes or living facilities, they might be able to get a performance under their belt and bring a lot of pleasure to these old people who could, who could watch from their balconies or be able to, you know, get a performance to see.
Such an interesting idea. A tricky environment, though, with senior living centers being under such difficult constraints right now, Maite, but maybe something to kick around a little bit.
Yeah, we were actually thinking about doing another little version of a Porch Fest so that people can stay out, you know, pretty far away from each other, but still come out of their houses.
Yeah. Well, I want to thank our good guests here for coming in today and sharing their thoughts on some creative ways that artists can connect with their worlds right now. That was Maite Salazar, a poet and writer, recently started a group to support gig workers in Kansas City. That's a KC Gig Worker support page on Facebook,
yes,
right? And also Danny Kane from the Raven Bookstore in Lawrence, Julian Zugasa-Goitia from the Nelson Atkins. Thank you both very much.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
I'm going to go to Celia Yopes-Jepson from the Kansas News Service right now with breaking news about from Kansas Governor Laura Kelly's press conference this morning. Celia, thanks for calling in. I appreciate it.
Hi. Thanks so much for having me.
What did the governor have to say this morning, Celia?
Okay, so this is, as you said, breaking. The press conference is actually still ongoing, but here are the details we have so far. the governor is creating a new hospitality industry relief fund.
Wow.
The goal is to get short-term loans that will be zero-interest loans to businesses with 100 or less employees that are really hurting right now. And the idea is to help them, you know, meet their payroll, utility bills, inventory expenses, you know, whatever could be causing problems for them right now to survive through this crisis. She's talking about a maximum of $20,000 loans. It's a fund of $5 million. And with this effort and other loan efforts that she's talked about this morning, we're talking about getting money to businesses in a matter of days. She also said that the state expects in either today or tomorrow to be approved for assistance, disaster assistance loans from the U.S. Small Business Administration. Mm-hmm. So that would be available for all 105 counties. And again, helping the small businesses that there's concern they might not be able to survive this.
Again, more examples of the Kansas governor being pretty progressive in this crisis space right now. She, of course, the first governor in the country to close all the public schools in her state, Celia.
Right. And there could be more details coming out today. So you know, what she said was she said, I don't want to mince words. Things are going to get worse before they get better. You know, we're looking at really daunting challenges, painful realities. It was a very somber tone, and she was flanked by representatives from all sorts of industries, banking, you know, restaurants, travel, really, I think, trying to put out a message of I'm listening to the businesses in the state, I'm hearing what they're going through, and we're going to try to figure out how to handle this situation.
Well, that's Celia Yopis-Jepson from the Kansas News Service calling in from Topeka this morning, again announcing that Governor Laura Kelly is declaring and setting up a hospitality relief fund with zero interest loans for companies and businesses with under 100 employees. Important news out of Kansas today. Celia, thank you very much for the call, and I sure appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Well, that'll do it today from Up to Date special coverage for coronavirus in Kansas City. Folks, stay safe out there. Keep your social distancing up. I'm Steve Kraske. Have a great weekend, all. We'll see you next week.